Good morning and welcome to the roundtable and our panel discussion for this Monday, the 11th of May. Very nice to have you with us. It's a special day. It's always a special day.
Because?
It's a special day because we're all here together today.
Yes.
But also, Rosemary's back.
Yay!
Rosemary was out doing something very important. She'll tell us about that. And first of all, welcome back. And it's nice to see that you're safe and all of that.
Thank you so much.
And it, which even better is that you're back. You survived what I'm sure was somewhat of a harrowing experience, and your mic doesn't work. So
that's
great. So let me try to do a little
fixing.
Yeah, there we go. Does that work? Yeah. Okay, that works. I'm gonna give this back to you now.
Hold on.
There you go.
Hello, Mike.
Hello, Rosemary. Okay. Take two. Welcome.
Oh, thank you. That's very sweet.
We'll get into that in just a second. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Joseph.
Now your mic doesn't work. Is that?
Is this serial broken?
Okay, there you go. Now your mic's okay. And hold on.
Hello.
Okay, Libby's works. All right. Before I introduce you, political consultant Libby Post. Good morning.
Good morning.
Wonderful to have you here. And as we mentioned, SUNY Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter Rosemary Armeo is here. And Rosemary was in Pakistan.
I was, which is why, you know, please don't talk about it, I said before I left, because that's part of the security. It is a really harrowingly dangerous place. The reporters have problems unlike anything we have here, as do the citizens. Like, after the drones started coming in, they had to start covering people dying and death and mourning. And you get the first story, of course, and it's huge, and everyone's interested. And then the second drone, and the third, and the fourth. And around the 40th, you're wondering, what do you say?
Yeah,
how do you make it different? And the other thing that's amazing there is I come back kissing the ground for the First Amendment. Blasphemy in Pakistan is a capital offense. And if you commit blasphemy, it isn't like a possible death sentence. It's a mandatory death sentence. And then there's how they define blasphemy, which is to say they do not define it. Anything they don't really like is an offense. The worst case I heard of was a pharmaceutical rep came to visit a doctor and was trying to sell his wares as they are wont to do. And the doctor was not interested, so he threw a calling card in the wastebasket.
Mm.
And the rep's name was Muhammad. So he is accused of blasphemy for disgracing the name of the prophet. Craziness, really craziness. And then in the middle of this, you see journalists who are trying to, you know, write between the lines, who are trying to get out the word. Amazing stories like polio has come back. Polio is back and forth in Pakistan. And terrorists are shooting the aid workers giving shots. And the sea around the nuclear power plant, which, by the way, looks amazingly like the SUNY campus. It's designed by the same person. The sea around it is kind of this luminous green color, indicating there might be a little pollution, but you can't write about that.
And this morning, we see, as you mentioned earlier, the Cy Hirsch story.
Big story from Cy Hirsch, saying Cy Hirsch, he is famous. He is probably the most well-known investigative reporter of our time, because he broke the My Lai atrocity story. He frequently writes about stories that go against the grain of what the official story is. And this time he's saying the whole bin Laden capture story was made up, that he was actually held and in place by Pakistani operatives who told us about it, and they cooperated with us so that we could have this big hero show.
Yeah, they were told, according to the article, to as soon as they heard the security people who were basically imprisoning Osama bin Laden. In other words, he was under their protection. He couldn't move. As soon as they heard the helicopter blades to disappear.
Yeah. So the whole thing, the fact that there was a fight was made up, according to Hirsch. The fact that they dumped the body in the sea was made up, according to Hirsch. He has them dropping body parts out of the helicopters over the mountains between Pakistan and India. The journalists I spoke to did not know this, of course, in Pakistan, but they certainly did think it was ridiculous to think that the Pakistani government did not know he was there. He was in an area of the country that's under strict military control. So it's very interesting. Hirsch says that he only has one unnamed source, which is not usually very reliable, except, again, it's Seymour Hirsch. He's very deeply sourced in intelligence communities.
But he has come under fire in the past for
Absolutely.
Stories.
Yeah. Yes, he has.
As to whether they were
100%
correct. True. Yeah.
Right.
So you don't quite know how to take this, I guess.
And, of course, the White House has not responded. So I hope that they will, because I'd sure like to hear more about it.
Hmm. Well, you're right sometimes and other times. I once sat at a luncheon with him and had a very unpleasant time with him.
Well, like many investigative reporters.
Gee, I can't imagine, Alan.
He has a huge, huge ego.
Yeah.
Yes, very big. He needs to be stroked. And Alan, you're not a stroker.
And let me ask
this. Oh, I'm so pleased to hear you say that.
It's true. You have to earn your respect. Well,
let me ask you this to get out of this conversation.
No, we don't want to get out of this conversation. We just want to get out of the use of stroker.
Right, that's right. I mean, I know, the question that comes to my mind is, what difference does it make? And yes, truth, justice, and the American way. I get that.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is, Bin Laden's dead.
No, I think it has a huge impact.
Well,
in other words,
if this is true, it has a huge impact on the veracity of the president.
Well, look,
I've
said it 1,000 times here. You can't live in a democracy if you don't have information. Mm-hmm. And if they give you some line of malarkey that turns out not to be the case, and you know, people make decisions based on what they tell you. You can't have an intelligent electorate.
This is like you're sounding like Hillary Clinton, dear. You know, like, oh, what difference does it make? You know, they're dead in Benghazi. It's too bad. Let's move on. No, usually we like to analyze what happened.
I wish he had done something. So maybe he did, and I missed it. So intense around George Bush and the weapons of mass destruction that got us into this in the first place.
He did, Libby. He wrote tons of stuff about that.
But,
and it was very anti-George Bush. I think this one is more sensational because it's one of the rare victories and triumphs of President Obama. So if it's called into question now,
and all
that's
those guys in that picture.
All those guys.
I shot him.
Well, there was that picture, in the picture that's still that we have.
Oh, yeah.
Watching of the president in the Situation Room and Hillary and all those other folks watching this.
Well, it's a wonderful subject for the media report. I want to use it in a class. Here's all the information we have on this story. Who do you believe? Who do you not believe?
Sure. Yes, right. That's true. On our media project program.
Which is coming up soon.
We would do that, yes.
Right. Well,
at what point do you think we'll hear from the White House?
Well, I hope today. There's a lot of clamor over this.
Yeah.
Even the place he printed it is weird. It's in the London Review of Books. I mean,
he's writing a book, right? Is that why?
Always is writing books.
Maybe it's because no one else would take it.
That's what I'm thinking.
See, if I was the White House, I'd keep shut.
Yeah, so would I. Let him, because he's really going to have to prove it. And if he has one unnamed source, yes, he's well-sourced, but let him prove it. I mean, it's now up to him to really prove this story. He could be true, but still, it's up to him to really prove the story. One of my favorite books of him, I have to say, is The Dark Side of Camelot, which was like,
book.
Oh my God.
Yeah,
OMG, capital OMG.
He dishes on the Kennedys.
Oh my God, it was unbelievable.
All the sex stuff is in there. Wow.
Right.
I'll bring it in if you'd like to
read
it.
But here again.
Sex?
No.
What?
Is it true?
Is it true? Right.
Oh,
is it true?
Oh yeah, it's true.
The sex stuff in the
Kennedy.
I mean,
look at My Lay. We wondered if that was true. Is it possible that American GIs were killing Vietnam civilians? And as it turns out, we know now years later, there was probably a My Lay a week.
There was a PBS thing on Lay.
Standard procedure.
The latest from the front is from Henry, who says, Mike Morrell, former deputy director of the CIA, totally refuted the Hearst story on CBS News this morning. He said it was totally false. Mr. Morrell was very close to this situation. Well, he may have been close to it, but that doesn't mean...
We're talking about who you can believe and who you're not. This is the CIA who said, what? Listening in on your phone calls? No, we would never do that. So, yeah, I really believe them right off the bat.
Well...
All right, let's take a break and...
Shall we, really?
But I'm just amazed.
Are you glad I'm back now?
Like after 10 days, you just lost nothing. You're like ready to go.
I'm jet lagged right now.
Yeah, that's what happens.
Imagine what it would be like if she wasn't jet lagged?
10 days in a war-torn country and she takes it out on us. We'll be right back after this.
support comes from Barnstars Antiques at Rhinebeck, a Memorial Day tradition presenting over 120 exhibitors of furniture, jewelry, fine art, Inuit and Native American artifacts. Appraisals and more, May 23rd and 24th, barnstar.com. Fulton County Tourism in the Southern Adirondack Park, fishing on their 44 lakes, camping, hiking, biking, boating, and events. 44 lakes, 44 choices, 44lakes.com. And from Fadigan's Nursery, Latham, New York, featuring flowering container gardens, zen pots for shade, perennials, flowering shrubs, berry bushes, and gardening guidance. Independent since 1920, Fadigan's.com.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us. Roundtable at WAMC.org. If you would like to weigh in on a topic or two, just one's fine. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. All right. Let's go. We'll do this one fairly quickly. And that is the... We'll go to Saudi Arabia and talk about the king saying he will not attend the Camp David meeting and what this means and the importance of this story that King Salman will not attend meetings at the White House with President Obama or a summit gathering at Camp David this week, an apparent sign of its continued displeasure with the administration.
Me first? Yeah. Okay. Well, it looks kind of bad. I mean, that's a snub. On the other hand, it's not very serious. So it's kind of a gentle tap on the shoulder saying, hey, we don't like what you're doing in Yemen. You're getting too buddy-buddy with Iran. On the other hand, he's sending the crown prince, who's likely to be the real ruler in a very short period of time. So we get to size him up. That's a good thing. And it is true that the U.S. needs to figure out what it has to do, what it should be doing over there. I've said that for a long time. We still don't. And we're confusing our allies. We're making a mess of it.
Well, I do think that we can't underestimate the amount of animus between Iran and Saudi Arabia. I mean, it's huge. And it really is sort of basic to understanding everything that's going on around there. So now we have this very interesting relationship, at least in my mind, between Netanyahu and Israel, you know, who hates the idea that we're doing anything at all with the Iranians. And now we have the king of Saudi Arabia with him.
Strange bedfellows,
well,
isn't it?
Well, absolutely. And there's a lot that goes on in terms of allies, secret allies that we don't know about. In other words, that you know, we've known for years that the Jordanians and the Egyptians can make bad sounds about Israel, but are really our pals on that stuff. This is a huge thing for Obama to keep pursuing, because there are an awful lot of people who just don't like it and just don't think we should be doing it. And we have been playing games with Saudi Arabia for a long, long time. It's a terrible country. They do terrible things. You know, it's as anti-democratic as anything. We go three quarters away around the world telling everybody they should be more democratic, and then we put up with this stuff.
The only country in the world that will not let women drive. That is how bad it is. They execute people in public. It's a horrible place. And in fact, Obama began talking a little bit about that in public last week. And the Saudis didn't like that either.
But they are only one of our only allies in the region.
Well, they are an important ally.
Yeah. And it was interesting that the article, it ended with that the Saudis are our friends, but not necessarily our allies. And the Iranians are our allies, but not necessarily our friends.
Really?
Yeah.
You think the Iranians are our allies?
Well, that's how the article ended.
Yeah.
The truth is that our allies there are not with the people at all. We make alliances with governments that's a short-term solution to be friends with that corrupt and evil government. Say it with Mubarak. We're not in touch with the rulers of Egypt now, because we played that game. We liked Mubarak there. It was very comfortable. We're doing the same thing with Saudi Arabia, when, in fact, our long-term interests are the same as the people in the Arab countries.
Yeah,
we need to be standing on. So I like Obama's speech. I don't know what he's doing in Yemen. I think that place is really hard to figure out. It is on the nexus between Iran and Saudi Arabia. That's one thing. It sits right smack on the oil shipment lines. That's a problem. We've had bases there. They're now endangered. And Al-Qaeda's moving in there. There's just like so many reasons for us to be interested in it. But we're playing one side against the other.
But do we know what we're doing when we're playing one side against the other?
I don't see evidence of it.
Right. You know, our alternatives are incredible diplomacy, if we can make that work, boots on the ground, or drones. You know,
or there's a third, there's a fourth.
Which is? Do nothing.
Mrs. Weingarten said in the eighth grade, keep shut, Shartok.
Yeah.
Do nothing. But doing nothing doesn't help the people who live there, that's for sure. The women are still going to be subjugated.
Well, the women are going to be subjugated in Saudi,
all of those countries.
Saudi Arabia, and we're not doing a thing about it.
Okay, well, there are other things we can do, too. Like, let's stop selling arms. That is fueling all of these fights. There are American and also French and Russian and Chinese arms going everywhere. But we're selling superpower arms to Israel, and that's annoying the heck out of Saudi Arabia and Iran both. How do we get away with that?
Libby, you want to say something?
Well, you know.
We have to look at our Israeli policy. It is hurting us. You can't be friends with the Arabs and continue the way we have with
Israel. We have about 30 seconds.
Our alternative? Arabs overrun Israel?
Yeah. No, but and you get them come out back of the settlements. Them something.
And the Arabs are going to come back and say, thank you. Thank you so much.
Yeah. They want more than the settlements. They want the whole country.
Well, then Israel maybe could just settle for Israel and leave the settlements.
But the thing is that they don't want just the settlements. They want the whole country. Sovereignty, Israel's sovereignty is not important to these other countries. And so, you know, while some of them understand the importance of Israel from an economic point of view, Egypt certainly does, ISIS, Al-Qaeda, whoever you want to call it, the flavor of the week in terrorism right now, wants to see Israel wiped off the map.
This is the policy we've been pursuing for 60 years, so I can wait until after the pause to argue against it.
Yes, you can. But first we have to take that break, and then I'll unpause,
okay,
and we'll just go crazy.
Right.
Alan Shartok, Rosemary Romero, Libby Post, will be back after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to our roundtable panel for this Monday, the 11th of May. We have a lot to do here. The first thing we're going to do is let you know how you can join in on the conversation. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Alan Shartok, Rosemary Armeo, Libby Post, I'm Joe Donahue, and we have some letters. We're going to get to those in just a second, but first I'm going to do this. I'm going to unpause Rosemary and let her go off on the topic that she wanted to talk about right before the break.
Our Israeli policy, yeah, which is, you know, just because I argue against America completely backing up with no question Israel, that does not mean that I want their sovereignty infringed upon. I believe in the right of Israel to exist. I want them to exist. I think they've done a heck of a job in their area. They have done miraculous things. They have not done miraculous things on foreign relations with the Arabs around them. And it would do immense good if they would go back to the idea of a two-party state, agree to the same talks that we, you know, had hopes for back in the Carter administration, and stop the stuff with settlements. That would perhaps start a new relationship with the Arabs around them, and they wouldn't need the same protection.
So the leaders, let me just get this straight, because I'm sort of with you about the settlements. I am. But let's assume they say, okay, we're not going to do the settlements anymore. Do you really have the naivete to think that the Arab people in those countries would say, good, especially in the really offensive ones, that we're not going to try to put Israel into the sea?
Look, Israel still has the best weaponry in the world, we know, because we gave it to them. They still have the backing of the United States, and they wouldn't just be saying, oh, we did a nice thing, now pay it back. That would be naive. What they're doing is saying, okay, we took a step. Now you get back to the negotiating table with us and President Obama, and let's fix this. And it could happen. The Arabs need peace there, too. They also need to be paying attention.
But not
to
the
their
leaders who are making their livings and their money out of increased bellicosity. They will never stop.
Right,
well, I
agree with that, and that includes Netanyahu.
Well, he certainly won an election that way, this time.
Yeah.
Bellicose,
I mean, just to be clear, just because I believe that Israel has the right to exist, as you do.
I do.
You know, I do think that we need to come to a peaceful solution. I would like to see a two-state solution. I did not support Netanyahu's re-election. I thought he was incredibly racist in his re-election. But I do support Israel's existence. And part of the problem here is that last summer, it was so horrific what was going on. And anti-Zionism ends up turning into anti-Semitism. And that's the slipperiest slope of them all, because in Europe, we saw this incredible rise of anti-Semitism. People in Paris, Jews in Paris, Jews all over, you know, Europe being attacked because they were Jews. Not because they were from Israel, not because of anything, but just because people draw a direct link between the two. And that's what we have to really be careful about.
If anything since the late 1940s should have taught us, it's that staunch, unquestioning defense of Israel has not made friends for Israel. It has not. They are more hated, and Jews overall are more hated because of that stance. We need a different way to go.
But without that staunch defense, it wouldn't exist.
I'm not saying end the staunch defense. I'm saying use it to push them to the table. And I blame Netanyahu a lot for this. We've had some heroic Arab leaders, and they've ended up being assassinated on both sides. And that's certainly
Arafat and Rabin.
Yes.
I mean, that was the closest we ever got.
Sure. And Israeli leaders who have taken a more conciliatory stand have also been killed. So I'm saying this fully realizing that it calls for incredible courage. But we got to do something different. It is not working.
All right.
So I'm done.
Let's go to the letters, and then we have a lot of topics to get to in the 22 minutes that we have left.
Okay. So Eva says, Alan mentioned the dangerous nuclear power earlier this AM, which was great. But it should also be noted that the Spectra Energy Pipeline, which just got FERC approval for expansion, goes right near Indian Point. And Jack says, I'm surprised to hear Rosemary so passionate about us selling arms in the Middle East or anywhere else possibly. The arms are not what is fueling the problem. Of course, the presence of arms is a huge incitement to use them. But what is fueling the problem is the desire to fight among the groups. And then there's more. But as you know, we have a sort of an agreement on how much we're going to read of anybody. And Julia says, Rosemary, we can't stop selling arms. The military-industrial complex won't allow it, and it would result in the loss of U.S. jobs, a political hot potato. And
Aaron is the problem.
And Jeannie said, again, one of the few successes for Obama. While dealing with a complex world and obstructionists in the U.S., what about less soldiers dying in foreign lands, Arab countries fighting finally versus just USA? Putin is hurting without us going to World War III, a possible nuclear deal with Iran, Cuba rebuilding U.S. standing worldwide after Bush, etc. And George says, given the Pakistani government outrage at American action right after the killing of bin Laden, the Hirsch story makes no sense. The Pakistanis went out of their way to say they did not know about his presence. If they had him, why didn't they trumpet this to the world and collect the bounty? Why did they arrest and prosecute the doctor who helped the Americans? By the way, it's NSA, not CIA, that is collecting metadata. Well, George, be honest with you. Rosemary, I think, has already hit on it quite well. They have a constituency over there also that they have to please. And you can't believe that Osama bin Laden was living in that house under the shadow of their military establishment right there, and that they didn't know about it. Of course they knew about it.
You know, he is right about the NSA is collecting the metadata. I misspoke. It was the CIA that lied about torture. They hid the torture report and bugged all of the machines of the Senate committee overlooking them. So wrong information, but same idea. Thank you for the correction.
And then Charles says, LRB, Osama assassination. Thanks for discussing this. I thought nobody would care. I think you might go greater detail for those in the audience who haven't or won't read this substantial article, and that's from Charlie. And
I have to read the substantial article. Mm-hmm. Right now I'm talking on articles about the article.
Yes.
Okay. And Henry, I think we read one by Henry already, but I'm going to try to not surprise that Rosemary's dismissive comments about Mike Morrell. Maybe she should learn about him first and then offer an informed opinion.
I actually think he's done some really interesting writing. He's the guy who had to leave because of Benghazi. He was sacrificed for that. Mm-hmm. And I think he is pretty insightful. But no, I don't trust information that comes from any intelligence source.
Okay. And then Philip says the color of the water around the nuclear power plant is probably due to the temperature of the water. It is likely being heated by the steam coolers, and that renders the water unable to support life. Oxygen doesn't dissolve well in warm water, and I guess that's sort of it.
Pakistani's talking about it. I'll pass that on to the editors there. They're not allowed to write about it. That's a topic that's off limits for Pakistani news.
Mm-hmm. All right, so we mm-hmm. have many topics, so let's try to just do some bullet points here. First, we'll go to the. I know Rosemary was very upset that she missed this story, so we'll get her a little bit of a shot on Dean Skelos. We are now told late Sunday. The word is that his stepping down as majority leader of the state senate will likely happen this week and more than likely happen today.
I have a column out today which says, ready, aim, fired.
Fired, right.
Yeah, it's the same scenario that our Speaker of the House had to go through, right? Silver left in the same way.
Yeah.
So I applaud people who finally are getting a say, get them out while they're being investigated. And maybe we could actually institutionalize this, put this in the law that if you're indicted federally and you have to defend yourself against these rather major charges, you don't have the time or effort to put into being a legislator. Get out for a while.
Well, you and I do disagree about this. It's an accusation. And I think, unless your lawyer is allowed to make passionate arguments for you in the grand jury, which they are not, I think it has to mean something. I know this is an unpopular view, but I do believe that innocent until proven guilty has to mean something.
Kicking him out of the legislature. He can retain his seat, but a leadership position is different. You cannot be a leader and do all that entails while you are fighting a federal indictment. No one can do that.
I don't want to keep saying it over and over again, but I still think, you have to make the case, you have to prove it. You can't just say it.
Okay, well, bye-bye, Skelos.
Well, let's get down to the real brass tacks here, and that is...
Who?
Campaign finance reform.
That's right.
That's what this is all about. We need wholesale campaign finance reform with public financing as a checkoff on your tax returns, and then that's all you get.
And repeal of Citizens United.
Right.
And
repeal, that's
right. Libby, I don't think, in all honesty, I don't think that that's going to be permissible according to this Supreme Court. In other words, what happens is...
I know that's not permissible, but that's the only way to fix this.
No, but New York City has a great law. They give you $6 for every buck you raise. That's the way it should be. Because if you do that, then people can run for office and not be dependent on Leonard Litwin and his group for all of this money.
However we want to do it, the bottom line, something has to be done to take big money out of the electoral process.
And Watergate, of course, had a lot of reform.
That's right.
It was the stimulus for the reform.
But everybody found a way around all of that stuff. 529s. There's all kinds
of ways. They'll always do that.
Right. There's all kinds of ways of getting around this. You know, LLCs in New York is the equivalent of the 529 on the national level, where you can make this form of national PAC without any kind of real oversight. And we just, the Koch brothers are gonna control the country. We're headed towards fascism.
Then how come
here?
You're right. You're right. But I can't help but ask you, how come Obama won? The Koch brothers were certainly not for Obama.
Because I think that there are times when the people do understand the threat to their liberty, And this was one of those times. Oh, I do.
I keep getting I get yelled at by listeners.
I'm sorry, Rosemary. But I think this was one of those times when. Oh, first of all, here's the other part of this.
I got you on the run, don't I, Libby?
No. You don't have me on the run. There's a number of issues here. One is this country is centrist. Okay, number one.
Centrist right.
But centrist. That's why people are like looking at the Republican Party and their choices and saying, I can't vote for any of these guys. That's why, you know, we look at Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders on the left and people saying, I can't vote for either of those two.
Okay.
So we're a centrist country.
I have to say this. I want to hear you argue me against me. I think he won because he outsmarted the Republicans this time. He played the game and he did it right. He actually used the PACs and raised more money than the Republicans. I don't see that happening too much. Maybe Clinton
can pull
it off.
Yeah, he did. He was making a face.
He did.
A lot of money.
That's fine. He did raise a lot of money.
He played the same dirty game.
Well,
he just did it better.
The problem is that when someone else is playing by those sets of rules that gives you In an inordinate amount of power and an edge, you have to do that in order to be able to otherwise, you're saying, okay, do whatever you're going to do. I'm going to stay here and be Don Quixote and not do anything and still try to win without that kind of money.
I do agree that the law is basically bad.
Right, but ultimately, in the long run, just as you want journalistic ethics to be the top priority and an open government and open. Ultimately, what we need to do is reform campaign finance so that everybody has an opportunity to run and win.
Okay, you made the point. I just want to read the letter from our wonderful lawyer friend, law school teacher Steve Gottlieb, who says to Chartok and the Roundtable, any automatic reaction to charges given enormous power to the executive. My point exactly. You can't just make a charge. So if you say to an executive, or to the prosecutor, all you have to do is say you did something and you get removed, that's wrong. You have to prove it. I think he's right. Anyway, the peers
have to remove him.
And Sumaya says, thank God for Rosemary and Libby and their talk about Israel. Finally, it's out in the open. When one critiques Israel, one is not anti-Semitic. Sometimes, I think that's true.
Sometimes.
Yep. Okay, really. So that's what I got so far.
All right, let's take a break. We have three more topics to get to.
Really?
Well, I want to get to Indian Point. I want to get to the Trade Pact, and maybe those two are doable. We'll be right back.
Support comes from Mark Lawson Antiques, Saratoga Springs and Colony, New York, purchasing jewelry and diamonds, coin collections, silver, antiques, fine art, and estates. MarkLawson.com. High Meadow School, Stone Ridge, New York, now enrolling children ages 3 to 16 for Summer on the Meadow, week-long camps in modern dance, Chinese culture, archaeology, visual arts, and more. HighMeadowSchool.org. Berry Price Architecture, since 1996, specializing in buildings that integrate modernism and sustainability with regional materials and aesthetics. BerryPriceArchitecture.com. And from the Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, providing exhibits, public events, and educational programs for audiences of all ages for the Capital District and beyond. Skidmore.edu/Tang.
Good morning and welcome back to the roundtable and to our final round. Ding, ding, ding. Here we go.
We love each other, folks.
Yes.
Be clear, we do like each other.
Yes, there's just a lot of it. Even during the break.
This is just very, I've missed this. I needed this.
I know. All right.
Without you, it's just boring.
It must be humiliating to be wrong every once in a while.
The President of the United States spoke to Matt Bai of Yahoo News over the weekend, had some strong words for Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren on the trade pact, said he would be happy to fight Elizabeth Warren over the issue, saying, quote, she's absolutely wrong, before Matt Bai could even get the question out of his mouth. And then, of course, there is the overall full frontal push by the administration to get the trade pact passed.
Well, when Obama said that, Elizabeth Warren's ratings went up among those liberals in the party who have been polled. I mean, I talked to Chuck Schumer the other day about this, and he's about to be the number one Democrat in the United States Senate, and he made it quite clear. He made it quite clear that he was against this thing that was going to cost workers jobs in the United States. It's a tough one.
I love this debate. This is, I think Obama and Warren, both sides, are truly, truly believe in their position. They're not fighting this because they don't like each other or because they're angling for some sort of power position. They both really just have a different view. It's a great debate. And I don't know where to stand on it. I think jobs in the long run will be gone. They will be lost. But that's in the short term, I mean, because you're going to give you're going to give position to other countries. But over a long run, we get in there now before China. We become trading partners with these countries in the Pacific Rim, and that means long term growth. Both are really good positions.
I find it hard for the Republicans to come out against this. And that's
they're not against it, yeah.
Right,
that's going to
be very interesting. We're talking about, you know, strange bedfellows
yes.
that politics make. So it's going to be very interesting to see.
Yeah, how that works. Here is Obama who can't get the Republicans right. to, you know, say hello to him as he passes
right.
in the halls.
Yeah.
And
now
by the way,
now they're voting with
and
him.
Many of them are saying, "Oh, we can't be for Obama, even if we agree with him."
That right, which right. is
yeah.
just
crazy.
Absurd.
Yeah,
I mean,
good way to run a government.
Let's move right on.
Ding, ding, ding. Item two: the owners of Indian Point are planning to clean up several thousand gallons of oil that potentially spilled into the Hudson River after a Saturday night transformer explosion and fire. The fire began at 5:50 p.m., sent smoke billowing into the air and oil overflowing the plant's moat, according to Neil Sheehan, a spokesman for the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission. And the company is not saying exactly what's going on at this point. Indian Point is a history of transformer mishaps, but nothing life-threatening. Governor Andrew Cuomo said during a news conference Sunday afternoon of the facility.
Well, yeah, I mean, this is scary. I would use a word here, an adjective here, but I can't because we would be in trouble with our license. This is really, really scary because, you know, when this stuff starts going into the Hudson River, images of Japan keep coming into my head.
I have three words. Shut it down.
Agree.
That's it.
I don't like nuclear power. Too dangerous.
Yeah,
we don't have it.
And this proves
legit.
It. Mm-hmm. But it can happen here.
Three Mile Island.
There. Yeah.
3 Mile Island proved it in 1978. And we still have
sun and wind.
Right.
And
right.
it seems to move very slowly, though, after even we have these hiccups by the time something of the closing of a plant.
Oh, yeah, Marshall Plan. That's what we need. Marshall Plan. You know. Now, I know everybody says it, but we can do that. I mean, we fought a Second World War. We've done this. You take everything you can. You put it into solar and wind and whatever else and wave power.
It.
And you can do it.
But, you know, let's look at who's behind the energy interests in this country. You know, so they're going to fight tooth and nail to keep this place open.
Mm-hmm. All right. We got to all the topics. I'm very impressed. Congratulations to you all. One other final topic we want to get to this morning, and that is our lockbox. I understand there is very exciting news when it comes to the challenge that is on the challenge that is on the table for the lockbox. Oh, Rosemary, while you were gone, we opened the lockbox.
Really?
Like, we didn't open it so that we can take the money out. We opened the little slot in it so we can put money in.
Like a piggy bank.
That's right.
Oh, I'm so thrilled.
Okay. It's roundtable@wamc.org, and Megan Finnegan is here to tell us what is at stake and why this is so important and what's going on. Good morning, Megan.
Well, I'm excited to say that we've been collecting a lot of money in the locked box, and we're up to $95,272,000 so far in the locked box.
But and what's our goal?
What do we have to have?
Well, we want to get to 375 because...
No, it's not we want to. It's we have to.
We have to.
I'm sorry
we have to
make that distinction with you.
We have to get to 375 because we actually have two locked box challenges on the table.
And what are they? I know about them, but I want you to have the pleasure of telling us.
Well, the first is from our wonderful friend, Mr. Big, who said that he will give us 10,000 if we can reach 375 by day one of the drive. And then we also got one just today from First Niagara Bank, and they're going to give us an additional 7,500 if we can make it.
Frankly, I was surprised by that. So that that, let me see if I understand this. That means if you add the two of them together, you have, what, $17,500?
Right.
Which we will get and may not get, because you never know. And may not get if we don't make it. That would be terrible.
That would be awful.
And everybody's in, you know, look, this is passion. This is what you're listening right now. You know why you're listening right now. You know why it's on your radio. You know why it's in the car. You know, it's because you need it. You love it. You may not love all of it, but you'll love it, and that would be great. Just keep kicking in.
Yep, and people are. They're going online to WAMC.org and pledging online to the Lockbox. Call us up, 1-800-323-9262. We've got to make it.
Yeah, and you get for $125, you get the wonderful...
Yeah, we have this wonderful stainless steel water bottle. It's real hot out. You really need this.
Yes, but I'm going to say, I'm going to just take a leap into anti-fundraising. Really, that's not what this is about.
No.
What this is about is the passion that people feel for this radio station.
Right.
And I'm frankly scared to death that we won't make it.
I think we will. We can do it.
All right. Okay. Everybody has their piece in that? Okay, good. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Megan, thank you so much. Thank you very much for the update. We appreciate it. And we appreciate all of you being here this morning. We welcome your letters if you want to keep on sending them. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Anybody have? We have 30 seconds. Any final words?
Excelsior. Carpe diem. And all like that.
Rosemary?
I can't think of a thing. It just, my mind went blank. I'm jet lagged.
Okay.
Happy Mother's Day, one day late.
One day late. Very good.